I don't actually read the Bible. I was raised Catholic. I believe Jesus Christ existed. I believe he was a very noble fellow. I don't take the Bible literally like some people do, though.
I believe in it. I believe it from Genesis to Revelations.
Sometimes if I go to church with a friend or something and it's there, I'll pick it up and read it because I think it's interesting and I think there's a lot to learn from it, but it's maybe not something that I use to guide everything that I do in my life. So.
I started coming to Crossroads about 4 years ago, and I probably moved from seeker mode to becoming a believer a couple years ago. I don't know the exact time, but it just kind of happened. And I had been reading a lot of books and just kind of studying up on the faith and what I believed and kind of setting what I believe in stone. And I started to hear the buzz about the Da Vinci Code. I saw the book on bestseller lists and I heard people talking about it. And I saw some things on TV about it, and I didn't want to be left out. So I went and I got the book and I read it really quickly. I read it in like a week. And I thought it was a really good read. It went really fast. It was really interesting. But you know, I got to the point in the book where the author really starts to kind of rail on the Bible and really starts to raise all these different questions that are in the book. And it seemed believable. The author made some good points. It seemed true. You know, I looked at the different paintings that he talked about, and I thought about the different things that he said, and it just seemed like it could be true. So then I really started to question kind of what I believed, and you know, is the Bible true? If, you know, I've kind of based my life the last couple of years on that principle, and now all of a sudden that was called into question. And I just went back and forth and just had no idea. Really started to question myself. Really started to question my faith and what I based it on.
How do I believe in the Bible? I guess because, I mean, God puts it, he puts it in my heart that way. So I believe in God, so I believe in the Bible.
I don't believe it's relevant to my life.
I believe in God.
Yeah. I just believe in a higher being. It's just something that I feel inside.
Luckily, I knew some people here at the church, and I asked them, you know, are there some things I can read? Is there some research I should be looking at? You know, where can I find answers to these questions? And there were a couple books that I read about the Bible and the way the Bible was put together, and is the Bible true?
I believe there are a lot of useful metaphors in it. I don't believe it word for word as far as like letter of the law.
And I believe in the truths behind it and the morality behind it.
I think it's got some good metaphors, but I think something's been lost in the translation over the years, maybe.
I think that, you know, as anyone that writes a book, whether it was written by the folks that wrote the Bible or not, you know, you're going to get a perspective and a point of view that you got to take everything with a grain of salt. It's not the whole truth, I don't think.
I think I still have some questions, and I think that just reading the book just maybe shook my faith a little bit, and it still hasn't been completely rebuilt, but I've been rebuilding it over time by reading different things and by just kind of doing a lot more research. And I think I need to constantly be reading and studying up and questioning my faith, because it wasn't as strong as I thought it was, I guess. So I think that's going to be a constant process from here on out.
What is 50 million? 50 million. The number of books that have been bought of the Da Vinci Code. 50 million. Just out of curiosity, how many of you in here have read that book? Good. Yeah, a bunch of us in here. What is number two? What is number two? It is the all-time ranking of Da Vinci Code, the movie, in opening box office receipts. Of all the movies that have ever been done, the Da Vinci Code had the highest box office, only behind one other movie. You know which one that was? Star Wars. Star Wars. Oh, I don't know. I think Titanic actually had a slow build as it went and just crushed every record. But Star Wars. And people are kind of reacting all over the map on this. Some people are just ecstatic that there's interesting things that are happening spiritually. Other people are really bummed because they think that this is something that is, you know, coming against the foundations of people who have followed Jesus and all this stuff. And I happen to think it's actually a pretty cool thing that society is talking about spirituality, and we can talk about that here. It's sort of a jumping off point for us. I think it's fascinating that despite this movie that was nearly universally panned at the Cannes Film Festival, that it was a number two. And why is that? It's because people are looking for some sense of spirituality. We want some connection with God. We want some understanding with God. And the Da Vinci Code isn't just purely fiction. It's an awesome page-turner book. If you want a good fictional read, just go through the thing. But what makes it so controversial is in the very first page of the book, right after the title page, Dan Brown, the author, says this, "Fact. All descriptions of artwork, architecture, documents, and secret rituals in this novel are accurate." And if you've ever seen any interviews with him, you know that this is based on his spiritual convictions. He's writing fiction out of his spiritual convictions the way he thinks that it is. And so there actually is a point for why he is writing these things. You know what many of us are looking for? We're just looking for something that's deeper. Like, I want something that's different than the guy in the cube next to me. I want something deeper than that. I want something deeper than my parents' church or my grandparents' church. I want something deeper than the televangelists have, or I want something deeper than Saint whatever down the street. I want something deeper than Crossroads Community, whatever. I just feel like I want something deeper. And that's a good thing if we're defining deep the right way. Van's gonna do a song on this, which we're gonna jump off into again at the end of the service. And while I do that, we're going to take up an offering. And if you're newer here today, hey, we are excited about you being here, and we're not about your money. We're about helping you seek God, and that's what we're doing today. For those who've been around for a while, we're excited about some of the things that God is doing in and through us, and so that's why we get pretty excited about being able to be generous right now. And so I'm going to invite the ushers to come down and do that. And as they do, let's do some reflections on what exactly deeper looks like. God, that's what we want today. We do want the real you and the deep stuff properly defined. So help us to encounter you and help my words to facilitate that. Amen. Hey, did you notice like some of those pictures up there on that cool background? It didn't look like Beauty and the Beast. That must have been like a Beauty and the Beast book, not an old religion book. Did anyone else think that when you saw that? Yeah, okay, all right. You know, we'll have to talk with Neil who put those things together. And try to figure that out. Well, I want to talk today. We're going to talk today. How are you? How do you be a seeker? How do you seek? All of us in here are seeking in one degree or another, because we're here because we're trying to seek God. We're trying to get more of God, or trying to get God for the first time. We're in seeking mode. So I want to talk about how it is you go about seeking. What are the time-tested, spiritually proven ways to be a seeker? And before that, I want to look at two terms that are really critical in today's society of spirituality. And both these terms pop up in the midst of the Da Vinci Code. One of the terms is relativism. Relativism is this belief that you might have never said it this way before, you might have never thought of it this way before, but this is sort of the way spirituality operates in our world anymore, is that you really can't know anything for certain. What's right for you could be right for you. What's right for me could be right for me. And there's no absolute reference. And you see this in the midst of the movie. Two times, Langdon, who's the key character in the midst of the movie, and by the way, you might not care about the movie, you never want to see it again. The movie's just a beautiful thing to talk about, and the book's a beautiful thing to talk about, because it's a jumping off point that articulates where most of us are. It just mirrors the spiritual culture of our country right now. And Langdon says one time at the beginning of the movie, says, hey, it's what you believe that matters. And then at the end of the movie, in the very closing scene, he says it again. He says, so I say, what matters is what you believe. I went to the movie and the people were sitting around me, probably were bummed because I kept taking notes and speaking in my dictaphone. But they didn't say that you can't have any cell phones. They didn't say anything about no dictaphones inside of theaters. And this is sort of the way most of us operate. Hey, it's what you believe that matters. That's all that matters. It's all about sincerity. Nobody wants to tell anybody that they're wrong, because we want to all believe in sincerity. And that's what relativism is. You really can't know, or if you do know, it doesn't matter. Everyone can be right at the same time. And this doesn't work in any other area of life, but yet we try to apply this to spirituality. Let me show this for you a little bit. We're doing a lot of stand-up, sit-down. Say, stand up again. Please stand up right now. Get your finger ready here. Everyone, get your finger. This is a very important item. You're going to do two things in a moment. I'm going to have you shut your eyes, and I'm going to have you turn and point to which way is north. Okay? Shut your eyes. Hey, it's better than, don't let one point. Don't point. It's better than going and talking to someone about your favorite Memorial Day thing, right? All right. So, shut your eyes and turn and point to which way you think is north right now. Shut your eyes, turn and point. Don't, hit somebody in the face with your finger. All right. Stop. Okay. Everyone looks. Keep staying there. Everyone look where everybody. All right. Now turn to the person next to you and say, you're wrong. You're wrong. Okay, now keep pointing. Keep pointing. We're not done with the exercise yet. We're not done. Okay, I have the compass here. I have the compass because true north is not relative. It is an actual absolute thing that we can know. So I've got my compass here to let me know, and this is north right here, right here. Whoever is pointing this direction, would you please stay standing? Everyone else sit down. Whoever's pointing, please stay standing. Everyone else sit down. Okay, all of you people who are standing, look at them and say, you were wrong. You were wrong. Okay, you can have a seat now. You can have a seat. It's just sort of a fun little exercise to do. Seems like it has no consequence. But if you're in the middle of the woods and trying to find your way out, all of a sudden, absolutely knowing what way is north is everything. It's very critical. It's important for us. And when we come to the idea of seeking God, we've got to realize we can't abandon all reason, all the laws that have operated in every other area of our life just because we're talking about spirituality. There are things that simply are true, and we need to seek that out, and we need to align our life to that. And one of the reasons why we don't want to tell anybody that they're wrong, actually, we shouldn't be about telling somebody you're wrong, but one of the reasons we don't want to believe anything is we don't want other people to have the feeling that we think they're wrong because I believe something. Because we value in our culture sincerity. And so we don't want to believe that anybody could be sincerely wrong. We want to value sincerity. And I'm kind of like this. One of the things that I hate watching, and therefore I don't, is presidents speak. I just hate watching or any senior level politician speak. I really do. The reason is because part of what I do for a living is I communicate. And I would love to be able to go to take a look at some of the senior leadership of our country and be inspired by how they communicate. I never have that. Never. Well, you know why that is? Because the way it feels to me anyway is they're not sincere. They're not speaking what's important to them. It's obvious to me it's filtered through speechwriters, filtered through pollsters, filtered through groupthink. And somebody's up there, they're reading this thing and I'm going, okay, so I guess that's the official line. But where are you? What's going on in your heart? So I had the same thing when I was in school, whether it be high school, college, seminary, whatever it was. When somebody had their lecture notes that they read, I got ticked off and I would just check out. I'd start doodling because I was insulted. I think I'm not coming here for you to read something you prepared 5 years ago and you do it every year this time for the next 5 years. If I wanted this, I'd go to the library and just sit down and read. I don't need you to read me what, I want to know what is going on in your heart. Go ahead and make up words if you want, because people make up words are smart. Go ahead, make up words and say things that aren't true every once in a while or something. I'm fine with that, but I want to know your heart. And that's kind of where I am. Sincerity is very, very important to me. I mean, I think if somebody came out one day and running for president and they just said what was on their heart and they were sincere about it and I disagree with everything they said, really, I'd probably vote for them. I'm just so longing for sincere people of leadership in business or whatever it is. And so that's part of the problems I have too when I take a look at spirituality is I take a look at people who are doing and believing things that are totally different than me, but they're sincere as opposed to some religious fuddy-duddies. And I just want to believe that, or at least I don't want to think that they could be wrong. Or I could be wrong just because I'm sincere. I just realize that that's not being a seeker. It's being a relativist, a subjectionist, if that's a word. And we just got to recognize that that's one of the tensions. Second thing that's really popular throughout our society and spirituality is Gnosticism. You're hearing a lot about the Gnostic Gospels, the Gnostic Witnesses, all these things. Gnosticism is an ancient sect that comes from the Greek word gnosis, which is knowledge. And Gnosticism believed that there is this super secret knowledge, the secret mysticism, the secret things that you have, that once you attain, you get this super hidden knowledge, then you attain enlightenment, then you attain oneness, then you get really close to God. And for much of my life, I've been a Gnostic in one sense or another. Now, Gnostics don't exist anymore, at least not that I know of. We'll get into that in a bit, why they don't exist. But there's still strands of Gnosticism today in our society and in our world. It happens with me every once in a while when I'm kind of down front and somebody will come up and talk to me after service. And this often happens with people who are churchy people and come from other churches, some other types of churches, and they'll come down and say, "Hey, it was nice, that was good, it was really good. But you know, one question I have for you." I said, "What?" I said, "Is there anything I can go where there's anything like that's deeper?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I just look for something, you know, it was good and everything what you said, but I need something that's like deeper. Anything you do is like deeper." I'm going, "Oh, you mean deep? Yeah, yeah, I mean deep. I mean, you're talking about like deeper? Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about deeper. Yeah. No, no, I have nothing for you that's deeper than this. No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. I know what somebody's saying when they say that, because this is a form of Gnosticism that I was a part of for a long time in following Christ. I used to believe that the purpose to read this book, the Bible, the purpose to go to church was to get knowledge I didn't have before. The purpose was to go and find something. Ooh, it's interesting it said that. I used to read this thing when I first started following Jesus. I used to read this thing simply so I could be in meetings and have the knowledge that everybody else had and I could participate in discussions. I used to actually go to the back of this, and there's these maps. I used to study these maps. One of these maps at the back of every Bible probably is Paul's missionary journeys. This is this guy who penned much of the New Testament. And you know how many missionary journeys Paul's on? Yeah, but... about three of us know that in here. And that's how many? Three. Three people. And I used to look at the three missionary journeys. And I used to study. You can go back to the Bible. You'll find all these different arrows. And I used to try to memorize these towns. And I could never get it all right. And then finally I realized, why am I doing this? Why is this? I'm thinking that memorizing this knowledge is somehow getting me closer to God. You know, and I know I used to preach this way. I used to preach thinking, I've failed as a communicator if I don't tell somebody something they don't know. So I'd work really hard to read something like, I'll just pick something out here, Book of Acts. Read something like, go to the house of Judas on Straight Street. And I'd try to find out in the Greek, what was Straight Street? So I go, you know, in the original, Straight Street was this road that was straight. And people used to walk on it. People would go, ooh, I didn't know that. Oh, wow. I used to feel like, that was what was teaching, telling somebody something they didn't know for deep. Hey, look, this is a very simple book. It's not simplistic. It's very simple because this is people's stories and God inspiring people, I believe, who wrote this thing. And when you start figuring out something that's deep and you can't understand, maybe you can't understand it because it's wrong. You know, maybe you can't understand it because it's really not helpful. So how do you seek? Five things I like you to think about. How do you seek? First is this. Look for the supernatural. Look for the supernatural. We're not talking about how to seek for philosophy, how to seek for arguments that'll shut up your friends while you're having a cigar in the back deck. We're talking about how to seek God. That's the kind of seeking I'm talking about here. And if I believe that there's a God, or if I want there to be a God, or if I'm hoping there's a God, and I'm seeking he, she, it, I have to accept at the same time that there is supernatural things. God has created nature. He's established nature. But as a result of creating nature, he can supersede any of the natural laws that he wants, i.e. miracles. And if he doesn't do that, then you know what? There's no need for me to seek him because there's nothing special about him versus anybody else. By being a seeker of God, I have to embrace right away that there are things that I'm going to question, that I'm not going to understand because they are supernatural, and they're things that I could be accused of being crazy. And if I'm not going to be accused of being those things, of having those things, and if God doesn't do those things, then again, I shouldn't seek at all. God by his very nature is above and beyond me and therefore can do things that are outside of nature. And I don't know about you, but I want that. I want that. I don't see a lot of it, but I want it. I want to see and sense God in things that I can't explain. Anne Rice has come under a amount of heat recently, or a lot of questioning. I don't know if you've ever heard of her. She did the Vampire Chronicles. I never read any of these books. Sounds fascinating. The Queen of the Damned. Yeah, I'm going to go get that one. Anne Rice, the Complete Vampire Chronicles. That, from what I understand, really great fiction, great books. And I think part of her stuff, too, was part of her spirituality was tied up in this. And then she comes out with a book more recently that's gotten a lot of heat called Christ the Lord. And here Anne Rice has gone on to seeking mode, and she's come to a place where she's actually gone back to some of her Catholic roots and has come to a very somewhat traditional understanding of Jesus, actually believing that much of what is, I don't know all of her story, but what's in here is actually the way it really was. And people have said, why is this? How did you come to this place? One of the articles I read, she quoted a book that was very influential for her that I've been laboring through recently. It's one of those really thick ones. It's by N.T. Wright. It's called The Resurrection of Christ. And in this book, this is a scholar's view at why the literal and historical resurrection of Jesus is critical for us to get our mind behind. Let me say it again. The scholar believes, as have thousands and thousands of people who have looked at this, the literal and historical bodily resurrection of Jesus. And you're not going to believe this just because I said this now, nor my next 3 minutes of stuff. But this is the things you have to think about as a seeker. Stuff like, why was there an empty tomb? Why is it the Romans and all of Jesus' enemies, they never debated there was an empty tomb. They put Jesus in the tomb and all of a sudden it's empty. How did that happen? Well, the way most people said that it happened who didn't believe in it was that the disciples stole the body. And they had to say he stole the body. But the problem was, how do you account for hundreds of eyewitnesses that actually saw this thing? There was all these eyewitness accounts actually in the Bible. And the people who wrote the Bible, they understood that this was a ridiculous thing. This was a totally unnatural thing for a physical resurrection. It was unique to religion. See, if you take a look at Greek mythology, their idea of resurrection was not this literal, I come back and live the same life again. This was like a brand new thing. This was mind-numbing. And yet they talk about it in there because they have things in there where they say, and hundreds have seen this. So when Paul goes and he speaks with people, whether it be Roman officials or Jewish officials, he says, hey, this didn't happen in a corner. Go ahead and talk to Mary over there. Go talk to Joe. They've seen it. What do you do with the eyewitnesses? And then finally, thirdly, what do you do with the life change? What do you do with the fact that people have changed their lives about this? One of the things that you'll hear every once in a while is that messiahs in the first century came as a dime a dozen. Well, if that's the truth, how come I don't know any of their names? Do you know any of their names? Why is that? You know why it is? Because they didn't have any followers, because they didn't change anybody's life, because they didn't do anything supernatural. Something happened with Jesus. He did these supernatural things. He healed these people. He came back from the dead. Things happened that rocked people's world and caused them to die for it. All they had to do was say, you know what? I didn't see Jesus walking around after he died. That's all they had to say. All they had to do was say that, and they wouldn't have had to be stuck on torches and lit in the Emperor Nero's garden. People went to their death. They were tortured. They were crucified themselves. They were burned at the stake. And all they had to do was say, I'm sorry, I didn't see the guy. It's a lie. They couldn't. Their life was changed. And we have to wrestle with these things. And I can't give you all the answers for any of this stuff today. I'm just saying, as a seeker, these are the things that you have to wrestle with. Look for the supernatural. Embrace the supernatural. Second thing, look for quality of life change. Look for quality life change. I was at a party last night and there was a couple there interacting with, and man, just talking with them just rocked my world again. These people were on the road of divorce, living apart, multiple adulterous affairs, and God got a hold of his life first and brought change and healing and restoration, and just a miraculous thing. You don't go and kind of unearth like interesting lost books of the Bible and it changes your life. It's interesting. It's interesting back deck stuff. But you want to look for something that changes life. You want to look for God, that he intercedes in your world and he does things that intellectual reasoning can't do. See, if 40 years from now, there's a piece of paper that's dug up in somebody's basement or out in the yard, and a piece of paper happens to say, Bengals win 2005-2006 Super Bowl. What are you going to do? You're going to say, that's not true. Because I was there. Or if it happens 100 years from now, someone's going to say, that's not true. I wasn't there, but my dad was there when he saw Carson Palmer go down at the stadium and get his knee rolled over. There will be enough eyewitnesses, enough verbal testimony that thing will never stand up. And the reason why it was lost is because it wasn't accurate and it was discarded. That's the reason it was lost. They won't find lost editions of the National Enquirer about little baby born with snake head and think it was actually true. Because there's enough eyewitnesses around. One of the things that happens in the Da Vinci Code is Teabing says, you know, the Bible wasn't a fax from heaven. Of course it wasn't a fax from heaven. They didn't have fax machines back then. You know, they didn't, They didn't have computers or any of that stuff. They used the best technology the average dude had. And that was verbal witness. That's the way all information was transmitted. Greg Boyd next week is going to get into this detail. Greg's going to be awesome. He is the most one of the most influential authors for me personally. Every book he writes, I read. I'm about two behind. Don't agree with everything that is in all of his books, but the dude is deep. Meaning he helps me think of simple things I haven't even thought of before. And it happens to line up with the life of Jesus. But you want to look for life change. You don't want to look for people who have ironclad arguments. Ironclad arguments, go to a math table. You can find arguments and reasoning and processing and understanding who God is. You should. Why? Because God has created the mind. He's created the brain. So you don't check your brain at the door, but you embrace that I have to find life change. One of the things that Jesus said that was so simple and so profound for me comes from the book of Matthew chapter 7. Take a look at an example of the kind of deep stuff that Jesus deals with here. Here's what he says in Matthew 7 verse 24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. Jesus says, when you hear the simple things that I say and you actually put them into practice, not here as a mental exercise, not here as a way to have a great debate, but when you actually hear them and put them into practice, your life is like on a solid rock. Winds come, waves come, and you're solid because your life is on a thing of substance. One of the reasons why many people, quote, lose their religion or lose their spirituality is because we had built our life on things that wouldn't weather cancer. We built our life on things that wouldn't weather divorce. We built our life on things that wouldn't weather a bankruptcy. It wasn't built on something solid. And what did Jesus say is deep? When you do the simple thing and you actually do it. You want to know deep? Anything you hear that is from God, just do it. Don't look for something you haven't heard God say before. Just do what you know God is saying to you. That's deep. That's deep. And Jesus says, the person that does this, listens to my simple words, and follows through, is like this. On the other hand, he says, everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. Says, this is back in Jesus' time, he saw people building their life on God's words and people building their life on something that kind of looked good, something that felt good. That's the thing about sand. You know, if you ever walk on the beach, it actually feels better right now on sitting on this than that rock. It's absorbing some of the cushioning on my back. It's nice and cushy. Same thing if you walk through sand, it squishes it between your toes. Sand is fun. You just don't want to build your life on it. I was thinking about this first time I stood on this. My first construction job I was responsible for. I was in college, and this friend of mine wanted to put an addition on his house that was larger than his current size of his house. And, of course, he didn't want to pay for it, so he figured he'd hire me on the cheap. And I'll never forget what he paid me. He paid me his old couch, his Honda Nighthawk 550 motorcycle, and $500 a month. That's all he had to pay, and he got a house. And then he did all the materials and stuff. And actually, I didn't get finished because I only had 3 months to do it. I thought I'd get it done, but I couldn't do it because this house looked beautiful, and we started peeling back the dirt because we had to peel back the dirt to put the new foundation for the new part. And as we peeled back the earth, in the foundation, the concrete block foundation, there were 3 cracks I could stick my fist through. I could stick my fist through the cracks in these things. This was an old Montgomery Ward kit house. I thought Montgomery Ward just did yarn. But apparently they did kit houses about 100 years or so ago. And I could actually put my fist through this. And you would have never known to look at the house because the house was a stucco house. Stucco is sort of a plaster thing that goes all around the outside, makes it look all good and nice. And it became very clear, we pulled away the dirt, that there had been problems in this house. And so they just stuccoed over it. They just went right over the cracks and put new drywall inside. So even the building inspectors, when they came, they couldn't see anything until you actually pull away the dirt of the house and you could see that the foundation was crumbling. And the reason? Because the blocks were actually set right on top of dirt. There's supposed to be a concrete pad, a concrete footer that goes around, and the blocks were sitting right on dirt. And so this house was literally sliding down the hill. And so what I had to do is go in with just my shovel and actually dig under the block section by section, make forms and pour concrete underneath the block to firm it up and keep it there. And so the whole time I did that, I kept thinking of this verse. I'm thinking, man, this is like how people's lives are. This is how I don't want my life to be. People look good on the outside. We look good on the outside, but we're cracking. Because our lives are built on some spirituality that feels good and whatever. And Jesus said, that's what people are like when they hear just this basic stuff and they decide not to apply it. And stuff comes and happens to them and they get swept away. That's deep. That is deep. That kind of life change. Third thing. Look for that which is time tested. Look for that which is time tested. A new thing, a new spirituality pops up very frequently because we have this narcissistic side of us that we don't want to be like everybody else. We're special. We're special, so I got to have my own beliefs. I definitely don't want the beliefs of the guy in the cubicle or my grandmother who annoys me or whatever. I want my own special thing. Oh, here's something new. Oh, interesting. Well, maybe it's new because it isn't time tested and it doesn't work. You want to look for something that's time tested. And this is one of the things about spirituality and religion that gets so frustrating, is there's always somebody new saying something we haven't heard before, and who do you believe? You ever get frustrated reading things about what you should eat and how you should work out? Those of you who do that. You know, if you're laughing, you know what I'm talking about. It's so frustrating. You got to read a book or you read an article in some health magazine, and one, they're saying, here's what you got to do. You got to have 3 balanced meals a day. You read somebody else to say, no, you got to have a bigger meal at breakfast, a little smaller meal at lunch, and your smallest meal at dinner. And you read somebody else to say, no, you're going to have 5 meals a day. 5 meals, little ones, chop them all up all throughout the day to get your metabolism going. And then you have somebody say, here's what the food pyramid looks like. And other people say, no, let's change that food pyramid. And other people say, well, you're just changing because you're, you know, trying to kowtow to the lobbyists who don't want you to change the pyramid. All these things. Then you can worry about working out. And people say, well, do a total body workout 3 days a week because your muscles need time to relax and adjust and rebuild themselves. You meet somebody else says, no, 6 days a week, just do a different body part every week. And other people say, no, aerobics one day, muscle the next day. Other people say, all these things, you read these things, you go, enough! And now here's what you do. Eat less and exercise more. That's all you have to do. Eat less and exercise more. That's simple. And, use some common sense. Don't eat less and only peanut M&Ms. Have some other things in the food pyramid other than peanut M&Ms. But really, see, I read this stuff, I get so mad because it becomes very clear to me that everybody's disagreeing with each other. It becomes very clear to me the reason why you got to say what you got to say is because if you say what everybody else has said, no one's going to buy your book. You got to say new stuff or no one's going to buy your book. You got to say something new no one's ever heard before or else you're not going to get the royalty for that article. Now call me cynical, but it just gets so bothersome. It's so obviously for me. And that's part of what happens in the midst of spirituality. Friends, people who are writing books are making a living, and they have to say something that is different or controversial to make a living. I know I could be accused of the same thing as a pastor of a church, but you have to at least think these way. Actually, step four. That's another point. Step four. Look for disconfirming information. Look for disconfirming information. So just because I'm saying it and you agree with it, go find somebody else. Go find, not just to prove that no one knows anything and everyone has their own convictions, but go find somebody else that can speak in language you can understand and figure out if there's disconfirming information that helps you come to conclusion. See, this book is time tested and there's definitely conundrums in here. There's things in here you go, oh, no, that seems slightly different than it was over here. Hey, the people who compiled this, they knew all about that stuff. It wasn't like, oh shoot, man, we let that one go. I hadn't thought about that. They knew about all that stuff. They did. You could take a minute soundbite of what I say this week and go 6 months in the future when I had a different purpose for what I was trying to say and take a minute soundbite from that. It would look like it contradicted itself. There's definitely conundrums in here. This was not meant to be a science textbook where everything built on each other in a linear process and everything. There is a linear thought process. This is cohesive, but this is also stories. 3,000 some years of stories that people were bound together who got touched by God. Either got being touched by God through the most ancient religion of Judaism or touched by God through the most ancient religion of Judaism's Messiah, Jesus, who then they had the New Testament written about him. And you read this and, man, it stands the test of time. I had a book that was given to me across my desk, might have heard of it, called Misquoting Jesus. I looked at this book and said, oh man, that's a good read. Can't wait to look at that. Because I want to look for disconfirming information. Helps me know God better. Anybody who does a stock market in here and you make a killing on the stock market, you don't realize it, but this is why you make a killing on the stock market for the long haul. People who make a killing on the stock market over decades make a killing because they don't just listen to the publicity rags that the companies put out. They don't just read what the person at the Wall Street Journal wrote that likes the company. They look for information that disconfirm what is being said. They look for that, and if they find it or they don't find it, it helps them make a better decision in investing. See, people, those of us in here who are marketing, you know that people buy on emotion and justify with fact. I like that car. Ooh, it makes me feel good. Oh, good. It has two miles a gallon better than my other one. Okay, good. I'll buy it. This is why many of us got divorced. You know, you bought an emotion and then you tried to justify with fact, but it didn't work. It just kind of crumbled, you know? Ooh, it may be a little too close to home. I mean, this is why we pick the people we date. This is why we pick the homes to buy. We buy an emotion and then we try to find something to justify with fact. And this is the way we do in spirituality too. We wait till we feel something really, ooh, I like that. Makes me feel good about myself. And then we look for facts to justify what we have. Now you got to engage your brain because God gave us the brain. Look for disconfirming and don't run away from it. I love that Da Vinci Code comes out. It's like it gives us an opportunity to talk about things that we might have in here as beliefs and struggles we might have. Opens up the dialogue. It's awesome. Five. Look for positive impact on the world. Look for positive impact on the world. See, God is a supernatural God. He is outside of nature. He's created nature. He is in nature, and he's also outside of nature. He can do anything in nature he wants because he's God. He can do anything in the world that he wants because he's God. And you know what he's wanted to do? He's wanted to have you be the primary answer to this world's problems. That's his solution. In fact, in the very first part of the Bible, in Genesis 1, God creates men, women, puts them on earth, and men and women have a task that nobody else has. It's called to take care of the planet. It's called to oversee, to be leaders, to be managers. So God sets up the planet in the very beginning in such a way is that you and I, God allows us to partner with him. That's how he sets up the thing. And so therefore, when you take a look at how problems in the world get solved, they get solved through people like you. And so you want to look for a spirituality that is bringing solutions to the world's problems. One of the reasons why Gnosticism isn't around anymore and why it just got lost is because they didn't make a difference in the world. They just died out. It was interesting intellectual thoughts, but eventually it was gone. That's why it isn't here anymore. There's a reason why there's a thing called Christ Hospital. There's a reason why you take a look at hospitals and they're often saint something or other. It's because the whole hospital industry was started by people who followed Jesus. That's just the history of it. Why? Because they took a look at Jesus' words and said, man, care for the least of these. When you care for the least of these, you care for me. And people said, ooh, man, people who are hurting, people who are broken, people have broken arms, people who have diseases, people who are lepers. We need to start things to be a blessing to them. Change the world. That's how hospitals came into being. Schools, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, many of the places that are creating, quote, you know, higher thinkers. All those schools were started by Christ followers. They were all originally seminaries. They still have seminaries attached to them. Why? Because people felt we need to start education because God cares about the mind. We need to develop education. Public educational system. This is one of the reasons why when followers of Jesus go into a society, education escalates. Hospitals escalate. Dialogue escalates. Women's value escalates. All these things escalate because people who take Jesus' simple words to task, they change the world. And so you want to look for somebody, some spirituality that is having a positive impact and changing the world. So these are the five things that set up how we operate. Look for the supernatural. Look for quality life change. Look for that which is time tested. Look for disconfirming information. And look for a positive impact on the world. Look for these things. Friends, if you're sitting here right now going, okay, I guess that's helpful. What do I do differently tomorrow? How does that help me? I don't know how that helps you. Here's what I know, though. These questions are the only thing your life is about. Your life is only about these questions. Your life is not about how do I have a family beautiful. Your life is not about how I retire early. Your life is not about any of that. You're here today and you're here in this planet because you sense there's something above and beyond that is calling you, or you're hoping there is and you want that. You're placed here because God is inviting you to be a part of His work, and He's inviting you into relationship with Him because God is a relational being. He is a relational God. The whole point of our life is wrestling through these things, not so we can just be in perpetual seeking, perpetual questioning mode, but so we can shut on something. You know, my mouth opens, not so I can have an open mouth. My mouth opens so eventually you'll put something in there and I can bite on it. That's the point of the open mouth. So I can bite on something, I can eat something, I can chew on something. And we need to have open seeking minds so we can bite on God, we can find the real God, we can find something that impacts our life. We're going to do the song deeper again. And I just invite you to stand up if you would. Go ahead and stand if you would. And let me tell you one of the things that we don't want to do when we do songs like this, or any song. We don't want to sort of just mouth, okay, this is a thing I should do. I guess I should mouth this. We want to make these things that are prayers or statements of where we are. And there's a lot of us that we can't sing with integrity some of the songs that we'll do in here in a weekend. But if you're here today, you're here today because you're a seeker. That's why you're here and not in the beautiful weather outside. That's why people look at you and say you're crazy. Why did you go inside a dark building today? You're here and other people aren't in here right now because you are a seeker. You are feeling something. You want to feel something. And so, in finding that which is deeper, that is the things that we're looking for that's articulated in the song. And so, if you want to say this, let's just say this to God, say this to ourselves and each other. God, you know, one of the ways I think of you is deep, and reasons I think you're deep is there's this things that pop in my mind that sometimes I just feel like you've dropped it there. I don't know why, but just during that song, I flashed back to this little cheesy song. It's cheesy. I thought it still sounds cheesy. I'm almost embarrassed to say it right now, but it just had a deep impact on me. This little cheesy jingle that I learned as a little kid. Jesus loves me, this I know, for the Bible tells me so. And I haven't thought about that all morning. I haven't thought about that song for a long time. But the simple, deep truth about that there is a guy that walked planet Earth that is of your same essence, that was sent by you, who is of you, and just loves me. Just loves me. Loves me in the midst of my doubts. Loves me in the midst of some of my fears. Loves me in the midst of some of my stupid moves. That's just deep. Other than my dog, I've not found a love like that anywhere. That's just deep. I'm not stunned by how bad things happen to good people. I'm stunned by how good things happen to bad people. That's just deep for me. It's just deep for me that there's millions of people that are in settings like this all across the world. And they're not doing it for anybody else who lived 2,000 years ago or anything. It's just deep to me that this is a spirituality that cuts across economic lines, race lines, gender lines, ethnicities. I mean, it's just deep for me. That there's this simple, profound thing that you are, that average people who are deviant to the mean, over the mean, or at the mean of any category can connect with. That's deep. And I'm praying that we would cut through the clutter to find the real you, and that we would be humble enough, all of us, humble enough to see that there's areas that we've been pointing to that are not north, that they're just dead south. And not because someone's right and someone's wrong, but because we want the depth of your character. And I pray these things in your name. Amen. All right. Hey, next week, don't forget, go ahead and ask.net if you want to craft some of the things that Greg's going to talk about next week and tomorrow night, or next night rather, and have a great week. See you. Happy Memorial Day.